Hello, this is Karen Harper Royal, and I'm a listener and supporter of the New Orleans Imperative. I'm asking you to join me in supporting this important show by making a donation. Donation information can be found at theneworleansimperative.org. Donate today.
Good morning and welcome to the New Orleans Imperative, the city's only radio program focusing exclusively on the state of the New Orleans public schools and the state of the so-called reform of the public schools in New Orleans. Hello, good morning again. My name is Dr. Torrence Sanders, and I will be sitting in this morning for our esteemed host, Dr. Raynard Sanders, who is away out of town, and hopefully he's enjoying himself. So I have the wonderful opportunity to share with you this morning just some thoughts and bring on a few guests who's going to help us this morning just talk about some pressing issues regarding education in Louisiana and New Orleans. I want to thank everyone for listening, for tuning in, and let you know also that our program can be accessed online. All you do is log on to WBOK1230AM.com. Again, that's WBOK1230AM.com, and click on to Live on Air. Well, as many of you know, the legislature is in session, started a few weeks ago. They'll be in session until June, I believe, till the first week or so of June. And of course, there's a lot going on, and particularly in the area of education. The House Committee on Education, the Senate Committee on Education, they've been meeting. We'll hear later on about some updates from both of those houses in terms of what happened with certain bills last week and so. But there's so much going on. We're going to have a special guest join us in a little while, State Representative Wesley Bishop. Is he on the line now? He's on the line. And so our friend, State Representative Wesley Bishop, good morning.
Hey, Brother Sanders. How you doing, man?
I'm excellent. I'm excellent. Thanks for taking time out of your real busy schedule. We know you're right there in Baton Rouge right now. And so we're happy that you're able to join us.
Hey, no problem, man. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, good. Well, I know that you are on the House Education Committee. Could you tell us just a little bit about the committee and some of the other members, and then we want to jump into one of the bills that you have filed and talk about that?
Sure, sure. This is my second year serving on the House Education Committee. When I was reelected a year or so ago, I actually volunteered to serve on the House Education Committee because I know that there were many issues that were pressing, particularly as it relates to Orleans Parish, and I wanted to make sure that Orleans Parish had a voice on the House Education Committee. I'm the only member from either Orleans or Jefferson Parish that actually sits on the committee, so I thought that was extremely important. The committee has roughly 18 members from all portions of the state of Louisiana. I happen to be also serve as the first vice chair of the Legislative Black Caucus. Last year when we went through committee and heard most of the bills, there were some things that we passed that I thought were pretty good. There are some things that I had some major issues with, particularly many of the bills that were part of the package that the governor pushed as it relates to some of the education reform. There are some things in there that I thought that were pretty good. I thought the process did not allow, particularly for the individuals here in the state of Louisiana, to really give an impact as to what was going on with those particular bills. We said then that those bills were unconstitutional, the way in which they were presented, and the courts have since backed us up. So everything that was passed on last year, of which I voted against, has all been found to be unconstitutional. So starting last week, we began to hear those bills, I guess, separately, and to see exactly where those are. And there seems to be a will amongst my colleagues, both in the entire House and on this committee, to do some things differently, just based on some of the votes that were casted on last week. But that's kind of where we are right now. And on tomorrow and Wednesday, we'll be hearing a slew of different bills as relates to education here in the state of Louisiana.
Excellent, excellent. And I want to thank you for, you know, the stand that you did take last year and voting no on those bills and with Act 1 and Act 2 that, as you mentioned, were found to be unconstitutional. And I know the governor is still and his staff are still trying to push through different pieces of that individually. But we know that, you know, you'll be on top of that and still be looking out for what is the best interest of the students and parents here in New Orleans. You did file a bill that's caught a lot of attention and some support also here from different groups, and that is House Bill 661.
software.
Why don't you talk about, well, first, what is that bill all about? Why the need for this bill?
See kind of how it all came about. And more, and what I'm going to find out, I guess, in my gone 3 years here, oftentimes the best bill that you come up with, you get just from having an individual conversation with somebody. It might be a teacher, it might be a principal, it might be a student. And so I just, in talking to different people, I followed that whole issue, particularly on the West Bank. And the two schools were Berman and Old Perry Walker. And their boards were trying to make a decision as to whether or not they wanted to go back to OPSB. They were deemed to be in good status. They qualified to return back. But one of the issues that they were dealing with had nothing to do with education. Their concern was that whether or not there will be a financial penalty if they return back to OPSB as opposed to staying with RSD. And just in the whole conversation, it seemed that that should be off the table. It shouldn't matter whether you're in OPSB or RSD, particularly when it comes to funds. The whole idea behind RSD is that it's a recovery school district. And as you are when you're in the hospital and you're a patient, once you recover, you're then sent home to where you came back from the very beginning.
That's right.
So the whole idea is that once the whole recovery piece is over with, you're then allowed to go back to your home. In this case, the home is the Orleans Parish School Board. So what I did was I talked to some different folks and filed a bill that would allow for those schools who made the decision to return to OPSB to not be penalized and to use a phrase called the LEA, and that's the addition to their own educational authority, which would mean that they would not be financially penalized from any monies that were actually coming in. Schools that are coming with RSD, when money comes in from on a federal level, they get the bulk of that money directly to them. Except when schools are in OPSB, OPSB then would serve as the LEA or the educational authority, would take a percentage off the top and then give the balance of that money to the school. So if I'm a principal, and let's just say for the sake of this conversation, there is $100 that I'm receiving. If there is one system that allows me to keep all $100 and the other system allows me to keep $75, it's in my financial best interest to stay with the system that gives me $100. But if all the schools have the exact same focus, if all the schools are doing the exact same thing, there should not be that kind of financial penalty. So that was the emphasis for filing this particular bill.
Okay, and specifically then, what this bill allows for, as we've read it, is then allowing for those schools that are currently now a Type 5, which was a takeover charter, to then become a new type of charter, which is a 3B charter. Now, Type 3s already exist. Those are schools that are converted, existing schools that then are converted into becoming a charter. And so this then would be 3B, which then allows for that specific financial arrangement that you mentioned in terms of, quote-unquote, keeping all the money that comes to them rather than going through a secondary or another entity.
Correct. And that's basically what it does. And I tried to do something different this particular time. Last year when we went through education, basically things were very polarized. And I think that's because of the way in which it was done. You had, people, things were very divisive. And so what I did was I got folks who don't always necessarily agree, and last year didn't agree on much, and asked them to work together. I got the Orleans Parish School Board, Recovery School District, the Board of Education, as well as the East Bank Collaborative, to all work together and put a team together, and they met for about a month, to come up with a bill that everybody can live with. Because what ends up happening, part of the problem is that folks say that, OPSB and RSD can't work together and this, that. Look, if we all doing what's in the best interest of all of our kids, we got to work together. You can't sit and expect the kids to do well and to achieve all the heights that we have for them if the adults can't get along. So I kind of took this as a challenge to try to put that entire group together. They've worked long, they've worked hard, and we're still in the process of meeting to try and see exactly where we are. I plan on bringing the bill sometime either this week, and if not this week, definitely by next week. But I want to give this group that I'm working with the opportunity to try to work out as much as they possibly can. If we could work all of that out, that would be fantastic. But if you can't work that out, well, I have a shorter version of the bill that, as it was initially filed, that deals strictly with the LEA status, and then I think probably file a neighboring resolution, which would then ask that same group and anyone else that's interested in this entire process to be a part of that, try and see how we can make this the best possible bill in expectation for the next legislative session.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying, and let me just kind of throw this in the mix. Even those who support the bill in concept, and you know, and that money shouldn't be quote unquote, you know, an issue in terms of where a school exists. But the issue of unity amongst all the schools, and for the sake of, you know, system-wide issues, for equity issues and, you know, admissions and enrollment and special education, all those things. The question is, with, you know, each school having their so much fiscal autonomy, is that a disincentive for schools to collaborate and really work together on those issues that cut across, you know, all the schools that affect students, no matter where they are? Does that make sense?
It does. So, and I can tell you that one of the biggest sticking points that we have is this whole issue of funding, particularly around special needs children. And that gets back, and we run all type of simulation, try to figure that entire piece out. The argument on one side is that, well, you know, if all kids took the exact amount of resources, that would be one thing. But particularly if I'm in a school and I have a larger percentage of special needs children, it takes more money to individually educate that child. And so if the money is going to follow the child, you should have a situation where that those schools that have a higher percentage of special needs kids would receive more money per student. That's part of the issue that we have. Well, for those schools who don't have a high concentration of special needs students, the way the formula is based now, they would get a lesser percentage of money per child. You know, and so that's something we're trying to figure out, the best way to do that. Some of those schools will argue that, well, you know what, special needs goes beyond those students who are just below grade level. But what about those students who are gifted or who are accelerated? Those students are special needs also. So should we balance those students with traditional special needs students?
Yes.
There's a lot of issues that we're dealing with. We haven't even had a conversation regarding transportation costs and things along those lines. So there's a bunch of different details that we have to address. And I just don't know if this particular individual bill is the right instrument to address all of those issues,
yes,
which is part of the reason why I would like that group to kind of work together over a period of time to identify all of the issues to put the best system forward.
All right. And we know you have limited time, but we do have a caller who I know you know and who's also has great expertise in this issue. Miss Luella Givens is on line three. Miss Givens, let's see if we can have Miss Givens. Miss Givens.
Good morning to both of you.
Luella, good morning.
First of all, Wesley, I want to congratulate you on jumping into the fire with both feet. You're relatively new to the legislative process, but you have certainly shown your ability and willingness to lead. And Reverend Sanders, I know you will remember from your tenure on the Board of Education, Orleans Parish School Board, and in fact serving as president, that one of the biggest sticking points is distribution of money between the RSD and the New Orleans public school system. Representative Bishop, you may not be aware, but from the beginning, RSD schools have gotten more money than the New Orleans public schools. And it's some quirks in that funding formula that I'd like to sit down and go over with you. Let me just mention that when the schools are saying that they will get less money, it's because they believe that they are being paid directly from the state and that the money that they get is more than the money that is received by Orleans Parish Schools. And it simply is just not true. One of the reasons is because the fee charged to the charters by the RSD is greater than the fee charged to Knox Charters. And Reverend Sanders, I think you remember that from your tenure on the board. So there are a lot of misconceptions about how monies are actually carried down to the schools. And that's one of the things that I'd like to talk to you about so that you're on firm footing. The charters and RSD do not get money directly from the state. Their money goes through the administration of the RSD, who charges an administrative fee. Dr. Sanders, you remember the same thing happens in all these parish schools. So the schools believe something that's not true, and that's why they're concerned about whether or not they will actually get less money, because that's what they have been told heretofore. The other thing I wanted to tell you is that in the funding formula in the MFP, each child gets a base dollar. You were talking about the percentage if you have more children who are special needs children. Each special needs child gets an additional amount of money not a percentage going to the school because it has special needs children. There is also an additional amount of money in the formula for children who are gifted. So both of those branches of special needs, if you will, are covered in the MFP itself. It's an additional maybe 0.5%. So you get 1.5 times the money for a special needs child, whether he is gifted or whether he is severely or profoundly handicapped. So that money is already there in the formula, and I think that what you may be hearing is a lot of people who really don't understand how the MFP is calculated.
Yes.
And I think it might be worthwhile to have that conversation.
Well, I would love to talk to you and get a real clear understanding as to how that process works. Let me just tell you kind of where some of what I said actually came from. And that was that we had agreed on a much smaller version of this deal that dealt just with LEA. However, shortly before our filing deadline, there were several pages of amendments that were suggested by the group that I was working with. Part of that would have somewhat of a different, part of that many of the schools had concerns about. So what we did was we actually ran simulations for all of the schools in Orleans Parish to see, based upon next year's numbers, what they actually have received an increase or what they have a deficit. Most of those schools had a small deficit, you know, 1%, 2%, 3%, but then that number only related to the overall budget. So, for example, if you had a school that had a tremendous budget, that 1% might be $600,000 that they would be losing. But for a smaller school, that 1% might be $60,000. And we had schools that kind of ran the entire gamut. And so they were actually represented on this working group that kind of tells where they are with that. And that's kind of where that sticking point came in. It may very well be the perception that they have, but to them, their perception is reality. And so that's why we're trying to work through that to get something that we can all agree upon or get a nugget that we can all agree upon to use it as a starting point and from this point forward try and work to put some legislation together that we can all try and push on next session.
Well, Representative Bishop, I'm glad and I hear that, you know, you're really working with various constituencies in the community. You know, this is a great start. It may need some tweaking, as you're suggesting, or more than just tweaking, but some real, you know, other considerations put in. And, you know, our former Bessie board member, Ms. Givens, obviously can provide some great assistance to you that I know you welcome in that. And I know several people will be up in Baton Rouge, including myself, tomorrow. And so we'd love to see you and talk with you even more about this bill. I know you're getting close to time. You have to go back to work over there. So I appreciate your time, though, being with us this morning.
Right, not about Luella, I will call you later, and I would love to talk with you. I stepped out of Ways and Means to do this interview, so I got to get back
in
there. Yeah, so there's something in there that I got to go forward on that. But I'll definitely be in touch. Brother Sanders, thank you much. I appreciate it, man.
My pleasure. Thank you for calling in. Ms. Luella?
Yes.
Yeah, if you can stay on just for a moment also with us. Sure. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
I just had a conversation, and I told them my children are well, and so I am well.
That's right. That's how we do it in the African villages, right?
We're all well.
How are the children?
The children in our village are not all well.
That's right. And that's why these bills that are being offered are so important, especially in education committee. And I just want to get your thoughts also. You know, I'm sure you're aware of a bill, House Bill 115, was offered by Representative James out of Baton Rouge, but that bill is the so-called parent trigger, where you know, if parents do a petition, more than 50% of the parents of a school, to say that, hey, our school is not failing and we want to go back to the district from whence we came and get out of recovery school district, that then after a Bessie board vote approving that petition, then that school would have the right to return. It was voted out of committee 17-0, I'm told. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's an excellent idea that parents be given a voice in the process. I'm concerned, though, and so is the outlying parishes. Parents are more independent of this charter school movement and less enamored with the idea, so I think it'll work well there.
Yes.
My problem is that in New Orleans, we have so much confusion surrounding which schools do well, which schools don't, whether my child is getting a better chance, and so forth. So we've got a lot of work to do. The other thing, Dr. Sanders, is we have a couple of organizations that have sprung up in the country now here in New Orleans that are confusing the issue by saying that they want to ensure that every child has access to a quality teacher, which would imply that that is not the case across the board now. And so you've got all of these new players that are coming in to influence parents that are being supported by some of the same players that caused the situation that we're in now.
That's exactly right. We got to keep track of, all of these so-called groups that claim to be representing parents, and we don't know where their money's coming from, where their origin is. And they are confusing parents who know intimately exactly whether or not their child is getting a good education or not.
That's right. And so if you've got that confusion, and then you say, okay, if parents want it, we'll give it to them. Well, parents don't know the truth of the matter. And so we may have difficulties here in Orleans Parish taking benefit from that law.
Yes. Well, thanks, Ms. Givens, and I hope to see you soon. We need to do lunch. I have another caller, Ms. Karen Harper-Royal, so thank you.
Absolutely. Take care.
All right. You take care. Ms. Karen Harper-Royal is on the line.
Hi. Good morning, Dr. Sanders. Well, Reverend Dr. Sanders.
Well, hey, all of that. Good morning. It's good to hear your voice. Thanks for calling in. Something you'd like to share with us?
Well, just in terms of that House Bill 115 and the whole idea of a parent trigger, when the bill was filed last year, what I call the kitchen sink bill, which included a parent trigger, I thought it was interesting that it did not have sort of a reverse trigger, since we know that 100% of the Recovery School District direct run schools are rated D or F, and 79% of the Recovery School District charters are rated D or F. You would think that if someone was concerned about children being trapped in failing schools, that the bill would have included a provision to allow parents to vote to move out of the Recovery School District.
Yes.
So I'm glad to see that that bill is moving forward, but I still do want to caution people about parent trigger in general. We need to make sure that we aren't just moving around the deck chairs on the Titanic. I know I have some parents in New Orleans who are really getting tired of constantly moving their children, and they would like the opportunity to just help make a school of their choice better rather than continuing to shut a school down.
Yes.
So House Bill 115, I think, begins to help keep kids in the same place while trying to give the school back to its local elected school board. And I hope that it will just lead us toward more stability in our schools.
Yes, and I think Representative Bishop mentioned, several months ago, two schools in Algiers kind of went through this process of sort where, parents and faculty voted to return back to the Orleans Parish School Board. But the board under which they are, the Algiers Charter Schools Association Board, denied that request from those parents and that faculty, and so that they had to remain in the Algiers Charter School. And it was just so interesting, to use one word, I guess, to say, here we have a movement, so-called reform movement, that's supposed to be all about parental choice and all of that, yet when the parents made a choice, then they were their choice was denied. At least I know what you said about the parent trigger. We need to look at it in terms of each way. But generally speaking, it seems like we should be wanting to support the voice of the parent in our public education and putting the public back in public education rather than serving the interests of simply these charter authorizers or managers whom many of us don't know where they came from, don't know where they're going to end up, and whose allegiance and real loyalty to our kids and our communities has not been determined.
Right. And as Ms. Givens alluded to, there are some groups that support school choice vigorously, as long as it's a choice going toward a charter school.
That's
so
right.
It's important for people to realize that when those groups come to you, say, we want to help parents organize so that they can pull the trigger, especially if it's where you're going to be pulling the trigger to go from your elected board into the recovery school district, parents really need to understand, and I'm talking mostly about parents from outside of the New Orleans area where they don't have a proliferation of charter schools. But so those parents, such as in Baton Rouge, if they organize and the support of some of these outside organizations and they pull the trigger, they need to understand the schools are going to go into the recovery school district.
Yes.
The parents are not going to get to determine what happens with that school.
That's right.
It's going to go into the recovery school district. All one has to do is look at New Orleans over the last 7, almost 8 years, where we have had the recovery school district in a big way. 100% of the schools are still failing.
Yes.
59% of some of the brand newly created charters are DRF.
Yes.
So, is this what you really want to do? And I'm really speaking to people in other parts of Louisiana. Do you even want to pull the trigger to go into the recovery school district in the first place? It doesn't give you what you think you're going to get. That's not a place where schools actually get fixed. They're not getting fixed.
That's right. Don't go to that hospital, huh? Don't go to that.
Right. They're not actually getting fixed. And, you know, it's just, you know, people, we always say that it's important to know your history, or you may be apt to repeat it. Do we really want the rest of Louisiana to repeat the failed history of the recovery school district in New Orleans? When you think about the first, do you remember the first school that was placed into the recovery school district?
That was Capdo.
And do you know what the ranking of Capdo is today?
Tell the audience.
The ranking of Capdo today is it's a D school. It was put into the recovery school district in 2003.
Yes.
That's 10 years ago. Not only are those children who were there long gone, okay?
That's right.
So it's not like they're transforming the academic improvement of a specific group of children. Those children are long gone. Capdo got the opportunity to start all over from scratch for the most part because it was a junior high school. And when it became a charter school, they decided they would start with kindergarten. So they built a school.
Yes.
It built a failing school.
That's right.
If anybody thinks that this is a model, that a recovery school district is a model that should be replicated across this country, which is what's happening, I know they replicated this mess in Detroit, and there's some other places across the country where they're looking at doing the same thing. Don't you think we should look at the first schools in this particular kind of a configuration to determine if there's success there or not before you scale it up?
That's right. Well, you know, and that just begs the question, you know, the only people who've been touting the so-called success of this model are the people themselves who are in the model and running the model. And just, you know, you and I both know, and it's good that there are several now groups of researchers, academicians from around the country who are poised to take a critical look and an independent look at really what has happened these 7 years or so since Katrina. And in fact, the audience should know that a local group here, Research on Reforms, led by Dr. Barbara Ferguson, who's a former superintendent and a lawyer, she has that group has filed a lawsuit against the RSD because the RSD has given student data and information to, I believe, a group in California, and so that they apparently can run numbers for them and crunch numbers to do an evaluation of sort. But yet they refuse to give that same data to local groups who have the same capability and who also can run numbers and crunch the data and do an independent evaluation. So that they want only their people that they select to do an evaluation, but not have anyone. And, you know, and that just violates all kinds of principles of academic freedom and just real fairness and fair play and honesty when if you're proud of what you've done, then shouldn't you want just everybody to get the data and get the numbers so we all can say, wow, you've done a great job? But that's not the case. And so it's, they have to have a lawsuit filed against them just for information related to these key matters. Karen, thanks for calling in. I have another call, but I hope to see you soon.
Okay, thank you for talking.
Thank you. Bye. We have line three. Daryl's on line three.
Dr. Sanders, I really wanted to talk to Karen, too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But the thing of it is, I thought, something you said earlier, Dr. Sanders.
Yes.
You said the allegiance of these management groups towards our children has not yet been determined.
Yes.
What more evidence do you need to see that they're after?
Well, I hear you say, I guess I was being too generous.
And hearing you and Karen talk, it's been 7 years. And we see their purpose. They have taken away the parents' parental power, the so-called power of choice. But still, I want to tell you, Dr. Sanders, we still have the power of choice. Just like you said, we don't know who these managers are.
Yes.
We don't know where they come from. Let's take our kids away from these people. Now, this is what we need to do, Dr. Sanders.
Yes.
We need to, over the summer, we need to start scheduling meetings, weekly, bi-weekly meetings, to give our kids options. Some kind of way they got us all scattered where it's hard for us to come together, and we are going, and our kids are going from one failing school to another. They're shutting down buildings. They're putting our kids in these portable trailers, and they're calling them schools. And in some cases, there are three sets of trailers for three different schools. These kids are being placed in parking lots, nothing about a school at all. And in some buildings like Cohen, where there are two or three schools in one building.
Yes.
And we're the only ones, Dr. Sanders, who can stop that foolishness. If we ever unite, and it's going to take a lot of meetings for us to do this, but we can do it to make options, to give our students and to give their parents options. Because it's like we're the hamster on that wheel. We are talking and talking, and I think there's still nothing's changing.
Yes.
And we see their motive. We see that they're not about us. They're not about our kids. It's only about making money for these corporations, and that's it. They will not build brand-new schools for our kids. And we can't use schools like Lake Area, New Tech on Paris Avenue. When you just look two blocks up from that school, you'll see what a brand-new school is. When you look at Holy Cross High School, and I made this comment before in the air over the last couple of years, and even going back to whatever the guy's name, the former superintendent before John White.
Pastor?
No, not Pastor. He starts with the P.
Vallis?
Vallis? Oh, something. But even this guy.
Picard, you're talking about. Picard.
Making a point. FEMA built that school. That's a Catholic school. It doesn't make a difference. When you look around our city, even this area, in Slidell, the FEMA built public schools also.
Yes.
For, I think it's Slidell High. I think it is. Over in Slidell, $55 million. That is a campus. That's how you build a school for students. You don't build a school for them and say, you guys go and work out at North for all your activities and everything else. These schools are for white students, I should say, majority of white students. They are self-contained. And we should demand the same things for our kids also. Don't put us build a school for our kids on a city block and tell us to be happy about it because you have two gyms inside of the school. Lake Erie New Tech has a chemistry lab, but no utensils, nothing, nothing for them to do experiments with at all, just the classroom. That's it.
Wow.
That's one, another reason why, because I worked it. I taught a class there. So I know what's there and what's missing, and I'm like, how can you build a chemistry lab? But you don't have any money for of utensils, the Bunsen burners, nothing like that at all.
Yes.
What our kids do, they're leaving. It's a part of the overall plan to make sure our kids are not prepared for higher education.
Well, Darrell, thank you for calling in and expressing those things. I hear you, and you know, this may be a good segue. Also, you talk about meetings and people coming together, and you may know there's a march on Baton Rouge tomorrow. I'll talk a little bit later on about. But there's also meetings generally every Monday night. They're either held tonight. In fact, it's going to be held at Christian Unity Baptist Church, but sometimes they're held at the UTNO office at 4:45 p.m. Okay. on Mondays. But there are numerous education activists that come there to discuss issues and strategies. And so I don't know if you've ever attended those meetings, but there are, you're right, increasing number of outlets for people to come together to do exactly what you're talking about, to be, you know, real engaged in terms of doing something that's really going to make an impact. But thanks for calling. I got one more call. All right. Thank you. Line one, Lee Barrios.
Hi, Dr. Sanders. This is Lee.
Yes, how are you?
If you haven't discussed already, I'd like to give you a little bit of information about the data, student personal data sharing partnership, as Superintendent White calls it, that he has entered into.
Yes, I did talk a little bit about that, you know, that there is a lawsuit that Research and Reforms, a local group here in New Orleans, has filed to get access to the same data that has been given. And I didn't call the name because I'm forgetting, but I know it's a group, I think, on the West Coast in California that they've contracted with to supposedly, you know, keep track of all of the student data and testing information, and supposedly over time then to be able to generate reports for the RSD as related to student, you know, achievement and what have you. And again, the issue is, you know, that's great. Do that if you want to do that, you know, if the capability doesn't exist within the department. But that is public access, public data. And data should be shared then with the public. And it should not be sequestered, put on hold until, you know, you're ready to give it out to somebody, or somebody else has already done something else with it. You know, that is just inappropriate. It's fair. It should be illegal. It should, you know, to deny access to all groups, whoever wants that data. And so if you, more information could be found on that from the Research on Reforms group. I think their website is researchonreforms.org, researchonreforms.org. And again, Dr. Barbara Ferguson is the lead of that group, who can really share more about that.
And what's really interesting, too, that came out a week and a half ago at the BESI meeting, was that not only are we not capable of getting that public information, but Superintendent White has entered into a shared learning collaborative where he's giving that information and extensive student data, including Social Security numbers, to an organization or a company called In Bloom. And I wanted to let the readers know that, and that he did not pass that through according to state statute. That has to be approved by the BESI board. They were surprised at the information. They were surprised to learn that the Department of Ed entered into an MOU with Credo several years ago. Well, just as Superintendent White was about to take office, to allow Credo for 5 or 6 years to have that student data, which they are continuing to collect until 2016, to do a report on the quote, success of the RSD. But I wanted your listeners to know that at 5 o'clock our time this afternoon, if they will go to parentsacrossamerica.org, they can get the link to link on to a live stream conversation public forum, which is going to have representatives of In Bloom and the New York City Department of Education to discuss exactly what that's about and how parents should be able to opt in or opt out of that, but instead they don't even know that it's happening. And parents are becoming very upset at the knowledge that we're sharing nationally our student information that will be a database that is, you never know, as we know,
yes,
those things tend to get hacked. But I want to let your listeners know about that if they want to listen in and find out for themselves.
Excellent. And give us that information once again for 5 o'clock.
You need to go to parentsacrossamerica.org and they will have a link. They'll discuss it. They have an announcement. They'll have a link for you just to click on. It's going to be a live streaming presentation. It won't be interactive for us, but you can listen, and it could be they'll have an opportunity to type in questions. But they know about the problem with Superintendent White, the fact that he has said that he's pulled back from that, but in fact, Inbloom says that he has not pulled out of that, and he's supposed to give a complete presentation at the next BESSE meeting. So parentsacrossamerica.org.
Well, thank you so much for that. That's some valuable information, and hopefully our listeners will be able to tune in, and maybe we'll talk back with you on, in the weeks to come and follow up on that issue, and in fact, if Superintendent White does present it to the BESSE board and see how they respond.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Well, Bye. Wow, we've had some great calls, callers so far, and a lot going on in the education arena. And as I mentioned earlier, there is a march and a rally tomorrow in Baton Rouge. It's not solely about education issues, but there are several education sponsors that are involved with this. It's called the Enough is Enough. It's Tuesday, April 30th. They're assembling and having a rally at 11 o'clock at the state capitol. And one of the sponsors is the United Teachers of New Orleans, but there's also a community voice, the Freedmen Missionary Baptist General Association, the Children's Defense Fund, the Advocates for Louisiana Public Health Care, the Greater New Orleans AFL-CIO, and Tulane University, Amnesty International. And also I know other groups such as the Jeremiah Group, which is locally been doing a lot of advocacy related to education, both in Jefferson and Orleans Parish. They're having a group that will be there. And so if you can make it tomorrow to be there, there'll be a lot of activity going on. And also on tomorrow, there will be, during that time, starting at 9 o'clock, there will be, the Education Committee will be meeting. And we've talked about a couple of bills already, this House Bill 115, which is the so-called parent trigger bill, which would allow for a return of schools back to the district from which they came. We talked about House Bill 661, which is the bill filed by Representative Wesley Bishop, who was on earlier in the broadcast. And that bill, again, allows for the establishment of a Type 3B charter school, which would allow schools that have been taken over to come back to the school system as in their own local education agency, which would enable them to, quote unquote, retain or get most of their money directly from those sources. And so Representative Bishop said he'll be taking up that bill in committee in the next week or so. But there is a bill that is scheduled to be heard tomorrow that I think is very important. I'm the son of a teacher who was certified and qualified, retired after 30 years. And there's a bill, House Bill 467, that's been filed by Representative Edwards. And this is a bill that would reestablish, and again, let me say that clearly, reestablish that in charter schools that they would have to employ teachers who are actually certified. Now, that may sound strange to some, but many of you may know that last year in the governor's bills that were filed, that they removed the requirement for charters to have certified teachers. And this is just shocking. I'm not a teacher. I'm a social worker and a pastor, a former school board member, but I have great respect for teachers, and I know that teaching is a profession. And the removal of that kind of criteria, of a certification criterion for teachers, is just, by many, seen to be just an attack on professional education. That's not saying that there's not a place for some teachers to be in classroom and to be working towards that, but to eliminate the requirement completely is a whole nother thing. And so this bill, 467, will reestablish teacher certification so that just as in the traditional public schools, teacher certification is mandated, such will be the case also then for charter schools. And so that will be taken up tomorrow according to the schedule at 9 a.m. In room number one in the House. And so that's on tomorrow. So that'll be a very important bill to speak towards. Also, there are several other bills that are, I think, are worthy of following in particular. And the other one is House Bill 598. And that's a bill filed by Representative Regina Barrow. Now, many of you know that, you know, back in 1998 or so, when the state first initiated its accountability system and the school performance scores were created. And, of course, a school is deemed to be failing or not failing and excellent or what have you based upon its school performance score. And it was based upon that that then schools, if they scored below a certain level, then were eligible for entry into the recovery school district. Well, what's interesting, of course, is that over the years, there's been changes to that score and how that score is even calculated. And so what that means is that if you're looking at schools and measurement of schools across the years, you're really looking at apples and oranges because the calculation methods have changed. And so it's so important that we get a handle on this so that we can really, when we're looking at how well our kids are, how well our students are doing, how well our schools are doing, it's important that we understand this. So this bill, House Bill 598, requires the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education to base performance scores on a 100-point scale, and I'll explain that in a moment, but then also it prohibits changes to the calculation of performance scores prior to the 2016-17 school year. And so the first point of that bill is that many people don't know what school performance scores. There was an assumption among many who may not have studied the issue, but the school performance score was based upon a score where the top of the scale was 200. Not 100, but 200. And so if you had a school with a score of 60 or 65 or 70 or 75, many people would think, well, wow, that's pretty good because that's out of 100. Well, surprise, surprise, surprise. It wasn't out of 100. It was out of 200. And so when you have that scale on that level and measurement, it's a whole different thing. So, and now recently, the school performance score scale, the top of the scale, was put down to 150. And so this new bill, though, if passed, would then change that scale to an actual 100-point scale. And so ideally, it would give the benefit at least of for most people, when they see a score, they assume that it's already on a 100-point scale, just as you did when you were in school. So this would make it a much more accurate kind of way of looking at it. And then this bill also prohibits changes so that we stop the moving target. We stop, you know, the figuring out, well, exactly where is the standard and how do we compare this school from 2 years ago to this school now if the way the scores were calculated were completely different. So that's a very important bill, House Bill 598, so that we all know what we're looking at when we see a school performance score. And of course, we know that in the last few years, in relation to school performance scores, then the letter grades have been added to school performance scores. And so, but the letter grades won't mean much if the scores don't mean much and are not understandable. So all these things are related, and so it's very important that they get stabilized and that they make sense and that they're based in common sense. You know, there's no reason initially for those scores to have been based upon 200 and then that being a secret for the most part, and so people really don't know what's going on. We're getting ready to close up in another 10 minutes or so. Our number is 260-9265. That's 260-9265 here at WBOK. I'm sitting in again for Renard Sanders, our host, Dr. Torrence Sanders, and happy to be with you today. And again, we also last week want to inform you that there was also some movement on some other bills. There was a bill to put a cap on funding for the TOPS program, which, you know, is referred to as the Tailor Opportunity for Students. And, you know, luckily and thankfully, that bill was deferred. It's so interesting here in our state where we still rank near the bottom in education. And here, the TOPS program is one of the beautiful things that Louisiana has offered to the country, where, you know, if a student meets certain basic minimum criteria, that they can get scholarships to go to state universities. And here now we have in a state where we need to be promoting education as much as we can. Here we have some who have put forth a bill to then put a cap on the scholarship monies that could go for students who are meeting those requirements so that they can get an education also here in our state, at a state university. So thankfully that bill was deferred. We need to be finding ways to get more kids access and opportunity to college instead of trying to find a way to limit kids from going to college. Otherwise, we'll be having a city, a community, a state where we increasingly will have the haves and the have-nots, those who are able to have an education and have possibility, and those who do not have education and therefore whose possibilities will be limited. There also was one other bill that I think was very important, and that was also looking at students with disabilities. And it says they are allowing a student with disabilities who is not pursuing a regular diploma to opt out of taking the ACT. And so we just need to look at bills that relate to our students with exceptions and exceptionalities and with challenges, so that we also make sure that we are giving them exactly what they need, giving them what they really deserve, so that they too can have all the opportunities available to them. I think that if we look at the members of your education committees in the House and in the Senate, it would also pay for you to get to know who they are. As Representative Bishop mentioned, he's the only member of the education committee in the House who's from Orleans or Jefferson Parish. And so yet, you know, those two parishes alone make up so much of the educational infrastructure in our state. But there are other members, one who's another friend of mine, Patrick Jefferson, who also went to college here in Orleans Parish at Dillard. And so he's someone who has put forth a good number of bills that really are parent-focused. And so those who know, who are familiar with Representative Jefferson, we do well to give him a call and to let you know you also support him. And the last bill I'll talk about is a House Bill 584, and that is filed by Representative Patricia Smith. Now, we also may be familiar with the fact that in the last year or so, a governor has really promoted what they refer to as virtual schools or these online schools. And I definitely believe that online education, as we know in many of our colleges now, is there are many online classes and online colleges and what have you. But when we look at that for the K-12 level, we have to realize that there's a deeper level and a higher level of accountability that needs to be in place for that, because we're talking about, again, the basic level of education for all of our kids in K-12. And so what this bill does, because when these schools were created, these virtual schools, so-called virtual schools, it really was done with little to no rules, little to no accountability. And so what House Bill 584 does is ensures that these schools, which our students are then eligible to sign up for, now have some accountability, that they have standards that one can put their hands on, and that we know then that once, if this bill passes and once these standards are put in place, that then if a student logs on to one of these virtual schools, that they'll still be getting an education that's meaningful and worthwhile. Again, we can on the one hand talk about high standards for kids who are going to class and sitting in front of qualified teachers, and then on the other hand allow school kids to sit at home and log on and finish and take classes from schools, so-called schools, which have virtually no standards on the other hand. That just doesn't make sense. And we owe our kids better than to expose them and to allow them to get caught up in a system like that where once they finish their education may not be worth the paper, or the diplomas may not be worth the paper that they're written on. So let us look and examine all those kinds of bills to make sure that our kids and our parents who are banking on their children receiving a high-quality education, that truly they get the education that they deserve. Now, as we get ready to close shortly, we want to let everyone know about, again, the meeting on tomorrow in Baton Rouge. So important that you get engaged and get involved on the local level, the state level, and even the federal level when appropriate, regarding education matters. And even if you can't come tomorrow, again, the legislature will be in session until June. And there will be other alerts, other notices, other bills in committee in days to come that require your voice and require that the public really have a part in public education. And so we just want to implore each of you to really take that time and to make a difference. You know, if you go to the House committee rooms, they're rather small. They really can be filled up with 50 people or even less, perhaps. And so if you come there, you know what you want to say, and you bring a few people, you really can change the course of what's going on and what happens in that room and with that legislation. And if we do our homework and we educate our legislators about the issues and how they affect us, and not just on paper but in reality, I'm here to tell you as a former elected official that it really, really makes a difference. People do listen when they see that you're involved and that you're concern. And so remember those bills. Continue to follow them. House Bill 115, the Parent Trigger Bill, House Bill 467, the Teacher Certification Reestablishment for Charter Schools, House Bill 661, the bill by Wesley Bishop, which establishes the Type 3B charter to allow charters to return back to the local school board. And what's interesting also about that is that there was an article in the paper a few days ago about a survey done by Cowan Institute related to issues related to school governance and the public's opinion about reform and charter schools and all of that. And so I want to encourage you to look that up on the Cowan Institute's website, but read it critically. But it was interesting was that there really wasn't there was a lot of division related to the public perception about the so-called success of what's going on in terms of our charter school movement and everything. And so I'd encourage you to look at that and think about really what can we do as a community to really regain control of our public education system. And it seems as though people are wising up and becoming more wise as it relates to all that has happened over these last 7 years or so, and so that they can be involved in a whole new level. So it's been great to be with you this morning. Want to let you know that this program will be rebroadcast on our website at www.theneworleansimperative.org this afternoon for listening at your leisure. And, well, as we thank everybody for listening, we hope you'll tune in again on next Monday. And most importantly, we want to thank our sponsors. They are Metro Disposal Company and Richards Disposal Company, the New Orleans Education Equity Roundtable, the Faubourg St. Rock Improvement Association, and the Wisdom Reception Center. Now, we want you to stay tuned and to talk to what you know with Reverend Jones and Reverend Littleton coming up right after us. Have a great week. And tune in again next Monday at 10 o'clock. Listen up to the update about public education, the legislature, with your host, Dr. Raynard Sanders, here at the New Orleans Imperative. Thank you and good day.